Hello and thanks for listening to RTÉ Radio 1's The Rolling Wave podcast with me, Aoife Nic Cormack. In this episode, my guest is Terry Moylan, editor of a wonderful new book called A Living Voice, the Frank Hart Song Collection, a huge collection of songs from the legendary singer and collector Frank Hart, who died in 2005. And to start, this is just a little taste of Frank Hart's version of the famous Dublin song, Cockles and Mussels.
In Dublin's fair city, where the girls are so pretty, I far set my eyes on sweet Molly Malone. As she wheeled her wheelbarrow through the streets broad and narrow, crying cockles and mussels, alive, alive, oh.
The well-known song Cockles and Mussels there from Frank Hart's album Daybreak and a Candle End, and that was chosen for us tonight by Terry Moylan, who's the editor of a really fine collection of the songs of Frank Hart called The Living Voice. Terry, that song in particular, why did you pick that one?
Well, as you said, it's a very well-known song, but it was written as a kind of a music hall trifle at the end of the 19th century. And Frank saw in it something that was better than a music hall trifle. He tweaked the air a little bit, particularly on the two words cockles and mussels, as your listeners will have heard. In the original, that's a rising cadence, and he turned it into a falling cadence using the same notes, the third and the fifth of the scale. And it sounds, in Frank's hands, it sounds like a traditional street cry. I think he did a little touch of genius to the song and made it, I don't know, something completely different, something that has a kind of melancholy feel rather than a piece of grotesquery as it originally was.
Yeah, he has. There's a brilliant line on the page of that song in the book. And what does he say? He says, "This is one of those songs that one hears sung more often by trained singers, choirs, or raucous rugby players than by ballad singers. However, just because a great song has fallen on hard times and mixed in the above company for too long, it shouldn't be neglected by the unaccompanied singer." He wasn't a snob at all, I suppose, or he wasn't stuck up at all when it came to looking for songs. He looked for the good in them all, I suppose.
He did, but he was particularly kind of irritated by the appropriation of traditional song by, let's say, the world of art music. He had no time for that at all.
Do you mean when the edges were softened off them a little bit? Is that kind of...
Yeah, they were watered down and sweetened up usually.
Okay.
And he preferred the raw bar, as traditional musicians refer to it.
Okay, well, look, we'll talk about the book itself in a minute. But first of all, just tell me about Frank Hart himself, who he was, where he was from.
Well, he was a Dubliner. He was born and reared in Chapelizod, just on the western edge of the city, and lived there all his life. His father was a publican, and growing up and being in the pub, he would encounter such characters as old Dublin Fusiliers who had fought not only in the First World War, but in the Boer War. And he heard their songs. When he started his working life, he was at a fair in County Roscommon, and he heard a traveller singing The Valley of Knockanure. And I suppose he had some kind of moment where a penny dropped very heavily. He realised he was listening to a song about real people and real events. And it transformed his perceptions, I suppose. It led to him spending the rest of his life, even though he was a professional architect by trade, his life was really given over to collecting, seeking out and singing the songs that had come to mean so much for him.
He was an interesting mix as well, I suppose, because not unlike a lot of first generation Dubliners, you know, he had the city and he understood all that went along with that. But he also had very strong rural ties as well. So he was able to kind of get the two types of song or the two, you know, the two communities.
Indeed, like many Dubliners, they say a Dubliner is a man with grandparents from the country. So he was able to leverage, as they say, both aspects of his background, and he made great use of both aspects of his background. I always thought his accent was gorgeous. He spoke in what can only be described as a pure Dublin accent, but it was a very attractive one. It wasn't whiny or grating or anything like that. He simply didn't affect anything about his speech, and he didn't take anything out of his speech. Like, he was honest. He was an honest man in every way.
And how did you know him, or how did you get to know him?
Well, I had my own moment once back in 1967. I was in town, and as I was a teenager at the time, I was going into every record shop and browsing, and I had already kind of encountered the Clancys and the Dubliners, and I thought they were great. But I was in Piggott's record shop at the bottom of Grafton Street, which was to burn down a few months afterwards, and turning over the folk music albums, as they used to be called, and I see Frank's first album, a picture of a ruined open Georgian doorway, and the title was Dublin Street Songs, and I was kind of gobsmacked, because this had a kind of a whiff of authenticity about it that I hadn't encountered before. It wasn't dressed up as a kind of a professional band. It wasn't presented to you in a prettified way. And that was my first encounter. And within a fortnight, I had written out and learned every song on the album. Huh. And it kind of changed my musical horizon in a way that I can't account for. But I suppose the perception of authenticity was the main ingredient in it. I met him a few years later when I started going to the Gaolian, and I found him to be a most agreeable, affable and entertaining man. So we became friends, let's say.
Okay, well, the book, A Living Voice, the Frank Hart Song Collection, how did the idea for this book come about?
Well, like the choice of the songs in it, which is Frank's choice of songs, the songs he recorded, the songs he put in his books, it was his idea that all the sleeve notes and the texts should be gathered together between the covers of a book. I had met him shortly before his death in his house in Chapelizod, and he mentioned this to me, that he'd love to see this done, and I said if I could do anything to help with that, I would. So a week later I heard of his death, which was a great shock. But at his funeral, I spoke to his daughter, Orla, and suggested that I might undertake this work. Now, it's taken 15 years, but eventually we've got there. And I hope that he would have been pleased with the result. I think he would have been.
Yeah, because just the format of it, just to explain to the listeners, it's based on his albums.
That's right. He recorded 9 albums over the years, 2 of them, or 4 of them actually, on long playing record. The first 2 were combined into a CD, so there are 8 CDs available. And what we did was we noted the words of the songs from his singing, rather than from the texts that were presented in the sleeve notes. And those texts, the tunes are written out and set in staff notation. And Frank's notes from his CD booklets are included. So everything that he created in his recording career is presented in printed form.
Frank as well. Frank Hart is the man behind that oft-quoted line, "Those in power write the history and those who suffer write the songs." And this next song, "Building Up and Tearing England Down," it connects to that idea of writing from the point of view of those who are maybe not the people in power. Tell me about this song.
"Building Up and Tearing England Down" was one of the songs written by Dominic Bean. And Frank knew Dominic personally and had a great rapport with him. He included several of Dominic's songs in his printed collection and sang many of them as well. For me, the glory of the tune is a lovely sour flat note in the second part of the tune. The line is, "Now I used to think that God made the mixer, pick and hod." And on the word hod, the tune is in the key of D. He goes into a D sharp, which is, I think, a stroke of musical genius. And I just love to hear that note every time Frank sings it.
"I I have won a hero's name with McAlpine and Costain, with Fitzpatrick, Murphy, Ash and Wimpy's gang. And I've been often on the road, on my way to draw the dole, when there's nothing left to do for Johnny Lang. Now I used to think that God made the mixer pick and hold, so that Paddy might know hell above the ground. And I've had gangers big and tough tell me tear it all out rough, when you're building up and tearing England down in a tunnel.
Building Up and Tearing England Down, sung there by Frank Hart, and the song written by Dominic Behan. Terry Moylan, from that first experience in Boyle, where he heard the travellers singing, he went on and really immersed himself, as you were saying, in the business of collecting songs, not just singing them. When did he first start recording?
His first recording was 1967. What happened was that Bert Lloyd had come to hear of Frank's singing, and Bert was the writer of folk song in England. He was the grand old man of English folk song, and he arranged for Frank to go over and record at Topic Records in England, in London. And when Frank went to London, he actually recorded two LPs on the same night. There was no kind of retakes or anything like that. And when Frank arrived in London, he was taken to Bill Leader's house, who was the kind of CEO of Topic Records at the time. And he and Bill Leader and Bert Lloyd and Alf Edwards, a concertina player, spent the whole trip just recording Frank's singing. Frank tells a very entertaining story about Alf Edwards, the concertina player, the accompanist. He would apparently listen to Frank sing a song that was to be recorded, and he would make a note of the music. He'd write out the tune so that he could properly accompany it. And then when they came to actually record the song for the record, Frank would sing it differently on every occasion, no matter what the song was. It came out differently from the way he had sung it for Alf's information. And Edwards objected strenuously to this. But it's a kind of an example of how traditional song differs, if you like, from art song. A traditional singer will not sing any song the same way twice. I'm not too familiar with art song practice, but I know that they follow a score, and there is obviously has to be a certain latitude, but a traditional singer changes the notes, changes the words and so on, according as the memory or the accident takes them. But it's lovely to hear a traditional singer recounting and explaining this situation directly themselves.
Yeah, because you talk a bit about that in the introduction to the book, about the difficulties, I suppose, of transcribing songs which aren't necessarily to be sung in the keys in which they're written, and really doesn't matter what key they're sung in so long as they're in tune with themselves, and they often don't have a rhythm or a metre that fits neatly into one time signature. So how did you, you really stress, you know, that these are guides. Is that how you approached it, that you were going to put down the skeleton of the song and then people could take it from there?
Yeah, there are two, as regards rhythm, there are two types of songs. There are songs that are sung to kind of regular dance-like rhythms, and they're fairly easy to transcribe. They're in common time or 6/8 time or whatever, and there's a regular pulse in them. So getting the rhythm there is quite easy. Other ones, songs that are sung to more florid airs, maybe like Donal Logue or Father Murphy, where the singer is huberting the tune, they're more difficult to transcribe as regards rhythm, because basically all you can do is look out for the stressed notes and indicate where they are. Within the bar, everything might be consistent with what the singer is doing, but there's no way of guaranteeing that every bar will be the same length, if you know what I mean.
I do.
The actual key, Frank didn't think about key, he thought about pitch, which really two different things. Sometimes he struggled to pitch the song in the range that he was comfortable with, that his voice was comfortable with, and he was well known for stopping and starting at a more comfortable pitch. His friends always cheered when this happened, and it was called doing a heart. But I heard him on a couple of occasions when he was singing to unfamiliar audiences, cautioning them that this could happen and that they weren't by any means to be embarrassed for him, because he was certainly not embarrassed. He was an exponent of traditional song, and this was part of the nature of traditional song.
He recorded a number of themed CDs, and often with his great friend and musical partner, Donal Lunny. And while the idea of, you know, those who suffer writing the songs was always at the forefront, it seemed from the work that he put into the factual research, he took, you know, the historical research and the facts behind the songs very seriously as well, didn't he?
He did, yeah. Really, the first of his themed albums were the very first two, Dublin Street Songs and Through Dublin City. But that idea came back to him later in his career, and he devoted entire albums to the 1798 rebellion, to Napoleon Bonaparte's campaigns, to the navvy and the working man, and the Hungry Voice, the songs of the famine, and of course love songs. After his death, his family put together the album of love songs. I suppose somebody might be a bit put off by the idea of a whole album of songs about Napoleon, or about 1798, or about the navvy. But in fact, they're wonderful albums, because obviously the tunes are different, the perceptions expressed in the songs are different. You get an idea of how people viewed events from all kinds of different angles. So they're great albums. I couldn't recommend them highly enough.
Well, we might talk about some of his interest in the Napoleonic songs just after this, but this is one of those songs. This is the song, The 18th of June. Tell me about this song.
The 18th of June is actually one of the songs that Frank sang for us when my wife and I visited him just before his death. We spent a lovely evening with him, and he was trying out different songs on us and giving us wine and chatting. But it's a gorgeous tune. It's a very plaintive kind of thing. It describes how, in the aftermath of Waterloo, all Napoleon's hopes are in ruins. And it's a kind of a lament for Napoleon that Frank regarded as a great man. My wife is French, and she and her friends don't regard Napoleon as a great man. In common with a lot of the French left, they see Napoleon as a dictator, almost as a Cromwell-type figure. But I suppose, being Irish, we can't help but see the man who could have delivered us from imperial rule as a great man.
All you people who live at home easy and afar from the trials of war, never knowing the dangers of battle, but are safe with your families secure, know you the long scythe of destruction has been sweeping the nations all round, but it never yet cut with the keenness that it did on the 18th of June.
The 18th of June, sung by Frank Hart. Did he see himself, because I know he worked as an architect as well, but did he see himself as a collector? I mean, did he go around with the tape recorder and collect songs and build up a collection that way?
He did, yes. He travelled the length and breadth of Ireland, and he knew every singer of note in the country. Like, he was on friendly terms with people like Eddie Butcher, Joe Holmes, Margaret Barry, Dominic Bean, that I mentioned earlier, Donough MacDonough. He was known to all his contemporaries, like all the Dubliners would have known him. People like, Donal Lunny, as you mentioned, Paul Brady, Christy Moore. They all regarded Frank as the kind of the dean of the subject.
And was he collecting, because obviously if you're, you know, employed to collect, that's one thing, but was he collecting for himself, or did he had a vision for what he might do with the collections, or how did he view it?
Well, he was collecting for his own use, certainly. He never regarded the songs that he collected as his own. Mm. If you asked him for a song, you would have it the following day. I once phoned him and asked him, would he send me sometime the tune of a particular song? And he said, hang on there a second and I'll sing it to you. And he sang it to me over the phone. So he was immediately forthcoming with anything he was asked for, you know. Mm. I know that he analysed or documented his collection in a huge database. And he invited me out to have a look at it once. He wasn't an expert in Access database, and I used it in my work. So he discovered this and he asked me out for some advice. And I found that it was an absolutely massive beast altogether. He had thousands of songs encoded in it. That is to say, listed and indexed and cross-referenced.
Wow.
And all kinds of subfields that described what was taking place in the song or linking it to other songs and that kind of thing. And that really was his collection. The stuff that appears in this book is a portion of his collection. It would be great to get that database up and running again.
Yeah, because I was interested in that. I mean, I'm not sure exactly how many songs are in the book, but you say, yeah, as you said, just a portion of them. So how many songs are there in total then?
Impossible to know, Aoife. I would love to know myself, but he never seemed to be struck for something new, you know.
Okay, well, look, let's take another of your, because you've chosen all of these songs tonight. I gave you the what probably was an impossible task of picking four or five songs that we could play. So you chose five good ones. So the next one is one of the famine songs. Maybe tell me about this song.
Lone Chana Kyle was a song of the famine written by a man called Thomas Madigan, and it uses the gorgeous air of An Poistín Fionn, the Irish language love song. The way Frank sings it is kind of irregular. He uses a chorus on some occasions and on others not, but it's the most affecting song of the famine, I think, that I've ever heard, because the way the words are fitted into the tune is just goes straight to the heart. The murdered sleep silently pile upon pile in the coffinless graves of poor Aaron. Just in those two lines you have several concepts or ideas intermingled. First of all, the murdered expresses the political idea that the famine was not so much a famine as a genocide, as some people say. But then the coffinless graves of poor Aaron is a poetic way of describing how the dead were just shoveled into holes during the 1840s. And the song is full of images and ideas like that. It just breaks me up every time I hear it.
Far, far from the Isle of the Holy and Grand, where wild oxen fatten and brave men are banned. Oh, lonely and old, in a far distant land, I wander and pine for poor Erin.
Lone Chana Kyle, sung there by Frank Hart, from the album The Hungry Voice, which he, the song Legacy of Ireland's Greatest Hunger, which he made with Donal Lunny. Donal Lunny is a very important figure in the Frank Hart story, well, the recorded Frank Hart story, isn't he, Terry?
Yes, I think Donal proved to be a kind of an organiser, if you like, for Frank. He took a leading hand in getting the later albums made, and he accompanied Frank on them. We owe a great amount to him, because what he left, the legacy of Frank's recordings, is a jewel in the crown of Irish music. His accompaniment for Frank was always sympathetic, and it always seemed to me to be very right, if you know what I mean. There are a couple of filmed recordings of Donal accompanying Frank, and you can see the two of them kind of looking at each other and agreeing through their eyes what's going to happen next at any given point in the tune. He was a very, very fine accompanist, and he enhanced Frank's records to a great degree.
Okay, well, the title of the book, A Living Voice, comes from a poem by Brendan Kennelly. The poem Living Ghosts, the line, all the songs are living ghosts and long for a living voice. And I suppose that finding that living voice for the lost song is what every collector hopes for, isn't it?
Frank was appalled at the idea of songs dying in books. I often heard him kind of speak critically about people who just collect songs as you might collect stamps to put them in books and look at them. He always wanted his songs to be taken up and passed on. He couldn't bear to think that a song would die because nobody was singing it. And every song in his universe, every song had a kind of a potential that has only needed the right singer to discover.
Well, Terry Moylan, it's an absolutely beautiful book, The Living Voice, the Frank Hart Song Collection, and it's full of life. I've been looking at it during the week and it's full of life, a very vibrant collection, and just essential for anyone with an interest, obviously, in Frank Hart, but also in song. It's due to be launched at the end of the month at the Frank Hart Festival. Do you know the details for that?
I kind of vaguely do in the back of my mind, but all the details can be found on the website frankhartfestival.ie.
And Terry, if people want to get their hands on this book, how do they do that?
Well, it's published by Kraft Recordings. It's a little outfit myself and Gerry O'Reilly got up years ago. We don't have a website, unfortunately, but we have an email address, craft.dublin@gmail.com. So if anybody wants the book, they can simply email us there and we'll organise it.
Okay, and that we'll put that address up on our website as well. So we're going to finish with a song, a song that I like a lot, and a song I think probably a lot of people got from Frank Hart, The Spanish Lady. Can you introduce this song for us and tell us a bit about the backstory?
Well, nearly everybody is familiar with the Spanish Lady as a song. But they won't be familiar with this version of it, which was, I never heard anybody sing except Frank or people who learned from Frank. It's got a very curious chorus. It counts down from 20 and from 19 to 0 or 1. And Frank's idea of this chorus was to say that this Spanish lady, she had got it all.
Well, let's have a listen to that now. The Spanish Lady, sung by Frank Hart. And Terry Moylan, thanks a million for being with us on The Rolling Wave.
Thanks, Aoife.
Around her shoulder she pegged the towel. And in all my life I never did meet with a maid so neat about the soul. She had 2018, 16, 14.
The Spanish Lady, sung by Frank Hart. And thanks for listening to the Rolling Wave podcast. For rights reasons, the music here is shorter than in the original broadcasts. So if you'd like to hear the full versions of the songs, you can just go to rte.ie/radio1. And this programme was first broadcast on the 13th of September 2020. Till the next time, Gur Míle Maith agus Slán. Thank you.